is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, March 11, 2024, and today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney. I'm working in Florida. Sean Bartley is working in California. And Sean, we hope that Joey Votto would get a job, and it happened. How cool was that the other day when you saw that news?
Man, what crystal ball did you have? Because you predicted that one, man. That's really exciting for him. I'm happy that he was able to sign with a team. So I'm looking forward to it.
He had so much passion when he talked to us. Like, you would feel he was just burning to get back on the field. It was pretty clear, you know, it's not about money. It's not about anything other than getting back on the field and playing baseball. He signed with the Blue Jays as a non-roster invitee, which means that he's in the major league clubhouse, but he's not on the roster. He's likely to start the year in the minor leagues. If he reaches the major leagues, he's getting a $2 million base salary plus $2 million in incentives. If he reaches those, the possibility of that. Here's Joey Votto on Sunday talking about joining his hometown team.
Yeah, I was a Toronto boy. I grew up in Mimico, like Shorne Park Lawn. A little bit of time in Oakville, but my family worked in downtown Toronto, and I was a Blue Jays fan. I watched Carter hit the walk-off home run. I watched us win against the Braves on the road. Those were the most exciting moments of my childhood. And so the idea that I'm back with the opportunity to possibly be a part of a team down the road that has championship aspirations, it's just a dream.
All right, a big move in the Dodgers camp. Gavin Lux had struggled defensively at shortstop, been having some issues throwing. So very quickly, we're not even halfway through spring training, the Dodgers have moved Mookie Betts to shortstop. Gavin Lux goes to second base. Dave Roberts, their manager, called the switch, quote-unquote, permanent for now. I've got some thoughts on this decision and what might be coming down the pike for the Dodgers in the future. Remember, they're going to open the season playing with the Padres in Korea in a couple of weeks. Yankees infielder Oswald Peraza could miss 6 to 8 weeks because of a shoulder injury. He's 23 years old. He'd already missed time with the injury this spring, so he's off the table indefinitely. O'Neill Cruz had a huge day on Sunday with two long home runs. Here's the second one.
And that's launched to right field. Oh, my goodness. Look at that ball. Jeez. Second home run for Cruz. That thing was launched.
The Seattle Mariners agreed to terms with reliever Ryan Stanek. 1-year deal for $4 million. And the Giants placed J.D. Davis on waivers. That he, of course, was made expendable because of the signing of Matt Chapman. And today, I was going to mention, a lot of fun in the podcast. We're going to be talking with Sarah Langs, of course. We're going to be talking with Taylor McGregor about the Chicago Cubs. Jenny Kavnar will be joining us to give us a preview of the Oakland Athletics. And today, Sean, we'll be talking with the pitching ninja, Rob Friedman. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, man. Super cool dude. I don't know what I was expecting, but so down to earth. Some really cool stories that we got from him, too.
Absolutely. What else you got?
Man, just want everybody to go, please check out the College Game Day podcast that we've been working on. Things are probably going to take a little bit of a switch as we switch over to March Madness kicking up.
Rob Friedman is known by big leaguers and his Twitter followers as the pitching ninja, and he joins us today to talk pitching, of course, in pitchers. Rob, it's great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So you recently have been moving from camp to camp, talking with a lot of pitchers. It's been a fun follow, seeing who you're talking with, the conversations that you've had. As you know, the best time in baseball is in spring training because everybody's ERA is perfect. Everybody's batting average is perfect. No one's done anything wrong yet. Give me some conversations that you really enjoyed.
Well, I enjoyed hanging out with the Mariners staff overall. Like, they have a unique personality, like the whole staff. They're unique individually, but they also have kind of a pack mentality as far as pitching, and they're all really good. I am looking forward to it. There's some commonalities between them. Like, they all, pretty much all of them, spike their slider, curl their finger on a splitter. They're all developing different pitches like the splitter. I thought it was an interesting group of folks, and I've admired them from afar, like just their stuff, but man, really, really good folks.
Specifically, what with each pitcher, tell me something that they said that stuck to you, each of those guys.
Well, all right, we'll start with George Kirby, who may be working in more than one knuckleball every year. He may work it in, you know, every other game, or I was trying to convince him to do as many as possible because I love knuckleballs. Like, there's nothing better.
Yeah, then we got the knuckleball. So right here, three fingers. Let it eat.
You know, he threw a nasty one last year to Seager in honor of Tim Wakefield. And he says he can command it. And you know how George is. He has to command every freaking thing he throws. So, I expect to see some more knuckles out of him. That would be awesome. Logan Gilbert, the thing that stood out to me is that dude is gigantic.
Like, yeah, I looked at the video, Brent, and I say this is someone who's 5'7¾" on a good day. You know, I looked at that video and that absolutely jumped out at me.
It jumped out at me too. I started talking to him. I'm like, dude, I need a ladder, man. You are bigger. He's listed at 6'6". He seems taller than that because he was standing next to Cal Raleigh, who's tall, and George Kirby, who's tall, and he's just bigger than everybody. His hands are massive. You know, he's showing me his pitch grips, and I'm like, this looks like you look like Wemby holding a baseball out there. It's just ridiculous how big his hands are. And very serious guy, takes his craft seriously. I expect a big season out of that dude.
How big are your hands?
Pretty big. So the slider's the same as last year. I'm up the lace and spike it. It's a weird straight down gyro slider. Yeah.
And you're spiking it just because it helps you get the gyro to it?
It got the finger out of the way. I started like this and that hit it and the vert was too high. Yeah. And for whatever reason, I spiked it. I put the thumb up on the side there.
Uh-huh.
And it's just bullet spin straight down.
Brian Wu is a fun, fun dude. Loves his fastball. Kind of a chill mentality. Again, young guy who has, I think, a pretty high ceiling. And then Bryce Miller, who may be the most chill out of them all. Like, he is getting ready to start a game in spring training. I'm walking out of the tunnel, and he comes and stops and goes, "I've been looking all over for you," and starts talking to me about his pitch grips. I'm like, dude, you've got a pitch in like 15 minutes. What are you doing?
Did he really do that?
He really did that. He's an amazing dude, and his splitter is going to be a big thing for him this year.
All right, you clearly tapped into something when you started your work here. Pitchers love talking with you. They love discussing their craft with you. Give me a conversation that you had with a player. And I had this when I was the first time when I covered the Yankees, because I was a huge Dodger fan and Reggie Jackson ripped my heart out as a 13 and 14 year old beating the Dodgers in the World Series. And as I'm talking with Reggie, there's a little voice in the back of my mind like, oh, my God, I used to hate you so much. Like, it was surreal for me to be talking to that person. What about you as someone who loves pitching, a conversation you've had?
Two recent ones, talking with Nolan Ryan and Greg Maddux about pitching. Those are guys that I watched their career. Nolan Ryan, obviously, legend. And everybody, he's a mythical creature, I think. And of course, Greg Maddux talked to me for like an hour about pitching. And luckily I knew his whole career inside and out, asked some very good questions, got very good answers. And I enjoyed that a ton. So both of those guys that was a little surreal for me.
Nolan Ryan, when we had him on the podcast, I think I've had him on one time. He scared the heck out of my producer, Josh Macri, at that time, because he picked him up and he said, he had to make some technical adjustment. And he said, hold on a second. And Nolan Ryan just barked at him and he like straight up. And he felt it was a little intimidating talking with Nolan after his reputation. What about for you?
100% intimidating. There's like, I tried to loosen, like, it took me a while to figure out to get him to talk because he's a man of few words, as I would have expected. I asked him about snow monkeys because he was the ambassador to snow monkeys, apparently, under Bush. And I said, what's your fascination with snow monkeys? And he said, I got no fascination with snow monkeys. Let's get that straight. And there's a whole long story, but yeah, talking to him is a challenge because you got to get him talking. And once you do, he's a really good dude.
Yeah. Well, and you know that he's got a million stories. If you saw the documentary that was done on him, oh my gosh. How did you get into pitching? What was your original fascination with pitching?
So I always loved pitching because I figured that, like golf, you know, you're in control of everything. The ball doesn't move. You're nothing happens until you throw it. Everybody's watching you. There's some pressure. But theoretically, you should be able to put the ball where you want to and make it move the way you want to and do all that. So I thought that this is a great thing to teach. My son played travel ball and high school ball and college ball, and I coached him the whole way. So I was trying to coach, and I wasn't a great player growing up. I played, but wasn't super. So
did
I had
you pitch?
I did pitch, but wasn't good. Like, I didn't throw very hard or anything. But I think it's great to start with a blank slate. So I hung out with, like, early on before Kyle Bodie was Kyle Bodie and Driveline, Alan Jager, Eric Cressy, Matt Blake. We were all in these little groups together talk pitching before anybody really took off. And I got to ask a lot of questions because I'm a lawyer. So, you know, it's one of those things, like, I keep asking people questions and trying to figure out what's true and commonalities among stuff, and then just start sharing it because I knew I wasn't going to coach forever. And that just started taking off, like, surprisingly. I had no plans of doing what I do. I still don't know how I do what I do. Like, I just wake up every day and do it.
When did you have the inspiration for putting the tail on pitches? Which is, I think, when I think of you, it's one of the first things where you caught people's imagination, and it reflected the movement that pitches have. Because, you know, Tim Kirkjian, he would always look at me when there'd be criticism on social media of a particular hitter who was having a slump. And Tim would look at me with that voice. I'm not going to try to imitate it, or look at me with those eyes and give me that voice and essentially say, I could have 100 at bats and I would hit nothing. Do you know how much that ball moves, right? And your tail that you put on the pitch graphically really showed that. What was the inspiration behind that?
Yeah, that and overlays, and it's exactly that. So I was sitting there thinking, there's got to be a way to show everybody at home. Like, you're talking about the guys getting paid millions of dollars a year, the best in the world at their craft, and fans feel free to yell at them, like, why do you swing at that? Why do you... And I just wanted to show, like, what pitchers were trying to do and how they were almost outsmarting hitters on occasion. Sometimes hitters win, boo. But they're trying out, you know, trying to outsmart them either with ridiculous command, ridiculous movement. And I just wanted to kind of show people at home why this game is so tough. And I think Lindsay Adler told me at one point, she's like, you know, you're not even a pitching account. You're more of a hitting account, because more people are shutting up now at stadiums going, why did you swing at that? Instead of saying that, they're like, oh yeah, he tunneled that pitch with his slider and did that. And I, you know, I love that. Like, I just want to show how hard the game is.
Give me the first time in your memory that a major leaguer reached out to you through DMs in response to what you were posting and what that was like for you as a fan.
I'm pretty sure it was Billy Wagner. And I tweeted something about Randy Johnson, who was his teammate for a little bit.
Yeah.
And saying how Randy Johnson didn't use his lower half very well. And Billy Wagner obviously did. And I was just going on about it, like showing how Randy Johnson's more of an upper half pitcher. And Billy was like, no, I think he uses lower half really well. And then I started showing him it, and he's like, oh no, you're right. Like, he didn't really use his lower half. And that was kind of, you know, I'm talking to Billy Wagner, one of the greatest closers of all time, on DMs. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. I think you'd agree with me that if Randy Johnson had access to Driveline, he might've thrown 115 miles per hour. What I mean?
He might have, like, ridiculous. Like, his mechanics were just totally made up. He might've had he said it took a whole community of people to keep him together because he was so 6'10" guys aren't meant to throw like that, right? Like, they're not meant to pitch. And he would say that it took everybody to keep him together. And if he was able to maximize mechanics, he might have thrown 110. Who knows?
Yeah, it was crazy. My favorite game that I ever saw pitch, I tell people, was Pedro Martinez, 17 strikeouts in Yankee Stadium in 99. No walks, one hit. Chili Davis hit a home run. But the second favorite one was Randy Johnson in a B game against the Padres in 94 when he got mad. One of the Padres pissed him off. And he just decided, and every guy struck out, which is like six in a row. He just waved his hand like that, like, get out of here. What?
I love that. Like, that's one of those things that I love. Like, Randy Johnson mad has got to be the scariest thing ever.
Along the same, I mean, I've always been fascinated with pitching, just as you are. And I remember when I covered the Yankees in 2001, there'd always been talk about Mariano Rivera and how many bats he broke. And so I kept track that year of how many bats he broke. After every game, I'd go to the bat boy, I'd go to Jorge Posada, and I'd say, I counted two. You know, does that match what you have? And I kept it in the log. And you know, Mo, he had that very absolute never change expression, which was the way he was mostly, but he also did that strategically. He never wanted to give anything to the hitter, to ever give the hitter any hope. And that year, he got so invested in that number. Like, how many bats? He'd see me and say, how many bats have I got? I'd be like, 15. And he'd go, no, it's a lot more than I got more than that. And then as it turned out, that season ended on a broken bat against Louis Gonzalez. I think off the top of my head, I think that was like the 48th bat he broke that year, and it ended the World Series. So, yeah, I love that. You know, that feedback you get from pitchers must be so much fun. Are there any other, you know, that you've enjoyed?
Yeah, I mean, being able to talk to Yu Darvish about all his pitch types.
Oh, my gosh.
Was incredible. Two things. Like, I had Yu Darvish trying to teach me a cutter just over Zoom like this. Say, one little cue he had was pull your ring finger and your pinky finger down, and it'll automatically, you see how your fingers automatically cut. And I was like, never thought about that. But like having him go through that was kind of amazing to me, just the amount of knowledge that that dude has. He said he doesn't want to be a pitching coach when he retires. He wants to be a pitch grip coach when he retires. He thinks he could teach anybody pitch grips. And I'm like, he really could. So that really jumped out at me. And then like Greg Maddux also teaching a cutter a totally different way. He just said he threw a slider off his index finger instead of his middle finger. And I was like, I never heard that either. I mean, I taught pitching, never heard anybody say that. So those are two really cool things.
I hope at some point you get a chance to have Rivera on. And also the story about Trevor Hoffman and how he got that amazing changeup. I was covering the Padres in 1994, and you know, he was a good closer. He was one of the, at that time it was extreme velocity, it was 95-96, and then after the strike he came back and he's throwing like 90-91, and he goes on and has this amazing career. And it must have been about 2007, last few years of his career, and I asked him, I said, so Trevor, what happened where you went from 96 to throwing 90-91? And he looks at me and he goes, off the record? And I said, sure. And he goes, remember when I was covering the Padres, I remember this day, the day the players go on strike in 94, all the Padres players went out for a day at the beach, a day of golf and day at the beach. And Trevor, who's a wild man, was catching a football on the beach. And he can remember diving into the surf and having his shoulder make a sound like air going out of a tire when he landed, which he didn't really think about till the next spring when the strike was resolved. And he goes to throw, and all of a sudden, the ball, nothing is coming out. And he's desperate. And so he's trying to think of changeup grips. And he remembered that the previous summer, he'd had a conversation with Doug Bockler, who is one of those pitchers who was acquired in this, Donnie Elliott. He was in the McGriff trade. And Donnie Elliott had showed him his grip on his changeup, which to pinch his index finger and his thumb on the seam of the ball. And he tried that, and Brad Ausmus was catching. He was like, oh, that looks pretty good. You know, 600 saves later, whatever the number was. You know, those are such fun conversations about grips.
They really are. And I love the way that, like, that's changed the history of baseball. Just that little thing. That's so sick. And Mariano said he picked up the baseball one day, and it would just, he was throwing his normal fastball and started cutting. It's little, like, now we're starting to know a little more about the science behind why things move the way they do, which takes some of the mystery out of it. I kind of love the mystery of it. But now you have your seam shifted wake. If you position a ball this way, it's going to do this, you know, all sorts of little things where we can slow it down and take things apart, which is also fun, but I kind of miss those mythical days.
And I think there'll be a degree of that to some point because of the different size of hands. Yep. And whether it fits, I mean, the perception of hitters, and I've never asked Pedro this, but as you know, the perception of Pedro's changeup, which was so unbelievable, was because of the length of his fingers. And I don't know if that's true or not, but that was always the perception of some of the pitching coaches.
Yeah, I could imagine that. He has like these freaky double jointed fingers and stuff. He can bend them like backwards and it looks like
ET. His wrist goes way back. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Devin Williams can do that. Like Devin Williams, his fingers aren't freaky long, but he has a ridiculous ability to pronate. And people told him, this is a cool story. I mean, people told him in the minor leagues that his changeup was terrible because it had too high a spin rate.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And you're talking about, you can argue, all apologies to Pedro, that Devin's may be the best changeup, most unique changeup of all time. Nobody throws anything that approaches his spin rate with a changeup. It's basically like a, you know, high spin slider, the reverse of it. So yeah, they told him that it wasn't, you need a low spin rate to be successful.
I would love to wish that we had all the StatCast data for Johan Santana's changeup, because yes, the way that that one moved, that was pretty amazing. All right. So I want you to look, you and I texted you ahead of time. I wanted to ask you about our top 100 list that we have and the standing of the pitchers where you have them ranked, and you can rip it apart. You got Garrett Cole's a number 7 overall pitcher, Spencer Strider's at 15, Corbin Burns at 21. The highest rated relief pitcher is Josh Hader at 61. Devin Williams, you mentioned, now he's at 99. When you saw our list, what made you think, man, they are total idiots?
Well, you know what? I know how hard this list is. I was doing a list, and this is, I'm going to kick myself again. I've tried to apologize publicly to Garrett Cole a number of times, but I had a top 10 list last year. And because Garrett did not pitch well the year before as well as he could, I know how good he is, but I left him off my top 10 list. And what did he do? He proved me as wrong as he could, which is what you should do as a dominant pitcher. So I hope anybody that is left out or underrated takes that as a challenge. The guy, I thought it's a good list. Like I wasn't really like, I'm not offended by anything on it. I thought you might have had Verlander too high.
He was a number 50 overall, and he's let's see, four. I'm counting him down. He's a number 11 starting pitcher.
Yeah, I would have like Kevin Gausman maybe too low.
Yes.
Yeah,
he's like behind Verlander. He's 51. He's one spot behind Verlander at 51. And I agree with you, especially where we're sitting now with questions about Justin.
Yeah, and where are we with Tarek Skubal? I didn't see him on the names that you sent over.
No, no. That was one we definitely whiffed on. Jeff Passan, when we taped something about the top 100, he's got Cole Reagans. Like, he feels like really missed on him. Like, what are we doing here? I was a little bit surprised that that Logan Webb didn't get more respect on our list. I think he was like the number 8 starting pitcher. I felt like, you know what, he's better than that.
Why does it? So Logan Webb never gets respect for some reason. Maybe
the team has not been good, right?
That's it. And he's low key. Like, he's not a loud guy. He just does his job and does it really well. So I agree. Like, Logan Webb was one of those guys I probably would have higher, only because I've had him too low too myself. And I fall into that same trap. I agree 1,000% with Jeff Passan on Cole Reagans. Oh, like, I'm out there in Arizona talking to pitchers and they're like, you know, who's got the nastiest stuff out there? Is that lefty for the Royals. And I'm like, Cole Reagans is like, yeah, that's the guy. Like, they don't even know his name. They just know how nasty he is. Like, without a doubt, Cole Reagans is a shooting star. And if you don't know his name, write it down and know it. Because at the end, second half of the year, he just blew up. Great pitcher, great stuff. 101 mile an hour fastball. Love it. Without a doubt, he should be on there. And I thought Tarek Skubal deserves to be on there too. I mean, just the way he pitched second half of last year, he's got his act together, nasty stuff, and just shove. So I would have had him higher, probably Devin higher than 99 too, but 99 is a good number.
Before you go, what was your inspiration in helping out with Sarah Lang's and ALS awareness? Tell me about how that conversation started with Sarah.
So the biggest thing for me is I like to show what's good on social media. I think social media gets a bad rap, or a true rap for some people. Like, some people are just mean, and I don't like to be mean. I like to be positive. And she exemplifies everything that's positive about baseball and about social media. She's just the most optimistic person. When I heard about her in ALS, I was like, I really need to do something, just because she's great. And I think that we need to come up with a way as a community to show how much we love her. And I contacted Kenny at RotoWare, and I'm like, dude, we need to do something. And her baseball is best is like a great catchphrase. Why don't we do something off that? And he designed a great shirt. I just thought it was the right thing to do. And I try to do something charitable, a few things charitable every year, just because everybody's been so supportive of me. The baseball community is so great. And I love getting everybody to band together. Somebody's got to do it. Like, somebody's got to be the galvanizing thing. And I've been so lucky to be in the position I am. I just thought it was good to pay back.
Well, I can't thank you enough. You know, as someone who's known him forever, it's really cool.
Thank you. It was just, it's so cool to see how that took off and to see the outpouring of love for somebody who loves the game so much at every level. Like, people are doing stuff for her over and over, and it's just great. Like, she deserves every bit of it.
All right. This conversation felt like 4 minutes and it was 24 minutes. Thank you so much, Rob. It's so much fun talking with you.
Great talking with you, Buster.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
0096.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. We had an awesome weekend because on Saturday, Julio Rodriguez hit his first home run of the spring, and then on Sunday, Juan Soto hit his fourth home run of the spring. So, I mean, that is a perfect weekend.
So I will tell you that, you know, in preparing for the release of our top 100, I've been speaking with a number of players and showing them our top 100 list and giving them an opportunity to rip it apart. And a lot of the comments that are being made are Julio Rodriguez is going to be higher. Like, in their eyes, he was someone who was not high enough on our list. So that I know you would approve of that. We just got done talking with Rob Freeman, who's known as the Pitching Ninja. They had an initiative which is done in your name after your announcement about ALS. Tell me about like first became aware of his work.
Oh my gosh! I don't know if I can think of the exact moment, but anyone who hangs out on Twitter on a nightly basis during games, at some point over the last, 5-6 years, I started seeing all of these clips. And I mean, I love when he breaks down pitches, but I really love are kind of the jokes they make. I remember there was a video of Gabe Kapler and maybe the interim runner last year walking back to the dugout in the exact same way. And he put it to some funny song like, I always love those quirky moments. I love that he captures those.
So I, you know, in preparing for my interview with him, I missed the news that one of his phrases, his big phrases, is becoming an official StatCast statistic. If you could... as I mentioned to him, the sword is an official number. Who's the one who's determining that?
So now that we have bat tracking data with StatCast, that's a new thing. It existed a bit last year, and I think it's more finalized now. There's an ability to actually say, okay, if you miss the bat, or I guess if the bat misses the ball on a swing by a certain number of inches, that is the sword, which, I mean, in colloquial terms, it's just the idea making the batter look silly. So again, I love that Zacchaeus gives us the ability to actually measure these things that we've been saying forever.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I also wanted to ask you about Joey Votto signing. How excited you are he's with the Jays. And I've been telling friends that, you know, 'cause when he was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, I was saying to anybody I knew, like, to know how smart he is and how confident he sounds because of how healthy he feels, I have been saying don't bet against him.
I mean, never bet against him. First of all, he is too good of a player to ever do that. But I was so happy. I mean, there are few signings that genuinely just make you so happy. No additional thought. Just pure happiness. I think about when Andrew McCutchen signed with the Pirates
Yes.
entering last year and then re-up from this year. That was like, this is how it should be. And I know Votto posted an adorable set of photos on Sunday morning of him as a toddler, a little baby, in a Blue Jays bib. And they said, I'm a little Blue Jay now. It's amazing. You know, I think now I'm technically a New York Islanders fan in the NHL. Well, when John Tavares signed with also Trump, with the Maple Leafs, he posted a photo of himself in his Maple Leaf bed sheet as like an 8-year-old. It's that kind of feeling where you know the universe, the baseball gods, whether knew that this should happen. And I love how motivated he is. You know, he posted on how he's excited to work his way back. This isn't a done absolute major league deal. He does have to prove himself, but he's Joey Votto will never bet against him.
Yeah, and I think that he loves that. Like, you know, having had conversations with him, you know, the podcast, et cetera, I absolutely think, you know, the fact that he's like basically indicating it's not about the money. It's not that he did not entitled. He's like, well, you're going to put me on the roster, guarantee me a spot. He's basically saying, I'll go ride the minor league buses until I get enough reps to prove to myself. You could feel the energy in him, like, okay. It's a challenge. He wants to get back to the big leagues and finish on his own terms.
I mean, I just absolutely love it. And he's talked about how he wasn't healthy the last few years. There's real reason to believe that he will be really, really good again. And I can't wait to see it. But I feel like that first home at bat, the ovation he's going to get is going to be amazing. I mean, a tearjerker kind of moment.
Oh, 100%. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 10. So I think I've probably done this number for us before at some point. Well, since we're still waiting on Blake Snell, I want to give everyone kind of a refresher on his being a reigning Cy Young Award winner who was out there on the free agent market. So there have been 10 pitchers to win the Cy Young Award heading into free agency. Five of those teams that offseason, which it seems like will grow to six whenever Snell does make his decision, and the other five re-sign with the same team. Now, this had not happened before 2020. It had not happened since 2004 that someone won the Cy Young heading into free agency. Since 2020, it has happened each year. We had Trevor Bauer in 2020, Robbie Ray in 2021, and Justin Verlander in 2022, and now Blake Snell in 2023. Now, 10 also work for the total number of Cy Young winners to change teams that offseason. So, in addition to the free agency, there are also trades with Ari Dickey. We had Roger Clemens, we had Pedro Martinez, and our friend David Cohn.
Number two.
Number two is 114. So I think I said last week or the week before, I would not do much with spring training. So as we know, they don't really mean much. But every now and then, something is pretty noble and worth pointing out. So on Sunday, O'Neill cruised in the first inning, hitting a 116.6 mile an hour home run. And then the second inning, in another home run at 114.4. So there have only been 5 instances in the regular season or the postseason of a player hitting 214 mile an hour home runs in the same game under Seckes, which goes back to 2015. We had Aaron Judge in 2021, Giancarlo Stanton, of course, Nelson Cruz, Stanton in the playoffs, Tyler Glasnow in the ALDS, and Matt Davidson, if you remember. He had that 3-homer game on opening day in 2018, and 2 of those were at 114+. If any other player has done this, I don't know if I'm talking about it, but O'Neill Cruz, this is what we expect to have him. So it's really good to see him healthy and doing this.
And number one.
Number one is, we're going to go with 6. For when you do your scorebook, number 6 is the shortstop. Mookie Betts was announced this week, or this past week, as the Dodgers shortstop permanently for now, according to Dave Robert. Now, we already knew that Mookie was moving to the infield this season. He was going to be their everyday second baseman. But due to some concerns with Gavin Lux, they're going to have them switching. Mookie has played 1,176 career games in the outfield, exactly 100 at second base and 16 at shortstop. Nobody in MLB history has played at least 1,000 games in the outfield and 108 at second and short. So, I mean, it's an amazing thing that if he's the everyday shortstop, he will obviously do this. The only guy to even have 1,000 in the outfield, 100 at second, and even more than 10 games at short was Ed Delahanty, who played in 1888 to 1903. So, I mean, Mookie's doing absolutely incredible things, as he always does.
Dave Roberts had an all-time phrase when he described this move. He said, it's permanent for now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I will tell you that I've had to talk to people around baseball about this move. And look, the Dodgers, I think you'd agree with me, the Dodgers are going to win a whole lot of games, no matter who the shortstop is in the regular season. But when I saw this, I was like, Mookie Betts, and I think he'll hold down the position and be fine during the regular season. But an infield of Max Muncy at third base, Mookie Betts at shortstop, Gavin Lux at second base. We don't know how good he's going to be. He just changed the position. He's coming back from losing all of last year. And Freddie Freeman, who I think you'd agree with me, among the four, is probably the best defender. He's above average at this point. I just don't think there's any way that that's the team they take into the postseason. That's the infield they take into the postseason. It does feel like that a move's got to come during the season. Maybe Willy Adames from the Milwaukee Brewers. But that, to me, is not an infield you're going to win with in October.
Yeah, I mean, all of those are great players, of course, but I agree that the expectation that are on the Dodgers this year are so, so high. They do think, I mean, Mookie is incredible. He will be amazing. He's going to be amazing no matter where he plays. But you do feel it for them to be the team they're expected to be. You probably want one more sort of impact defender in that infield.
Yeah, the idea that they would get through the Braves or the Phillies in a short series, giving away outs potentially at shortstop, I just don't see it. And so it will be interesting to see as they go along here if Dave Roberts' permanent for now changes. And maybe he becomes a little less permanent playing shortstop. All right, Sarah, always great to talk with you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes.
The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Sergeant and Mr. Smith, you're gonna love this house.
Bunk beds in a closet?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 Team Preview, Chicago Cubs, Machinations.
The big move just happened with the Cubs re-signing outfielder first baseman Cody Bellinger, who was so crucial to their improvement last season. They also signed Shota Imanaga, left-hander who comes to Chicago after pitching for years in Japan. But the biggest change was the hiring of new manager Craig Counsell, a move that was shocking in its timing with the November firing of David Ross.
The weakest link.
The Cubs ranked sixth in the majors in runs scored last season, making them, in theory, one of the best offenses in the league. But the Cubs floundered offensively when it mattered most down the stretch. They are paying Bellinger $30 million this year to be a star that anchors this lineup, and he demonstrated last year he's capable of being that guy. They need him to hit again.
The foundation.
The Cubs starting rotation should be pretty good with Justin Steele, Kyle Hendricks, Shota Imanaga, Jameson Taillon, Drew Smyly, backed by the excellent defense that includes Gold Glovers Dansby Swanson and Nico Horner, Bellinger, Ian Happ, and some strong catchers.
Win projection.
Some of the predictions for this team are, well, a little ugly. The Cubs are projected by Pecota to win 81.7 games. Sarah Lang says 84. Hembo says 87. I'm going to say 88 because I think that if the Cubs are in the pennant race, and they should be in a weaker division, they'll aggressively look to add at the trade deadline. Taylor McGregor covers the Cubs for the Marquee Network. Taylor, thanks for doing this.
Happy to be on with you, Buster. I can't believe the season's here. It's like you blink and the offseason passes us by and it's spring training and then we're ready to go.
Yeah. And I think that the hopes for this team got a lot higher after they signed Cody Bellinger. I thought all along that it was inevitable, in part because it seemed like he had so much fun playing on the team last year. What about you?
Yeah, I think I felt the longer free agency went on, the more likely it was that he would return back to Chicago. I just didn't know what other teams would be willing to pay him. I knew the numbers thrown out early in the offseason, he probably was not going to have a chance at getting. I certainly did not expect the Cubs to pay the numbers that were thrown out there. And so as the season progressed, I felt like it was more likely he would return. And you mentioned it, he was a great fit. He loved Chicago. They loved him. The Cubs needed lefty bats. And he was a big part of their offense. And so if they want to be the team they were a year ago and even better, they really needed him back.
It felt inevitable midway through September of last year that they were going to make the playoffs and they fell short. What's your sense of how the players processed that coming into this year?
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of bitterness towards what happened at the end of last year, but also a little bit of hope of, okay, we're right there. And you look at the Diamondbacks, a team that snuck in basically in their spot and ended up going to the World Series. So just a good reminder that a couple wins really matter. And if you can get in the playoffs, a lot of different things could happen. So I think they're confident in the team that they have. I think the NL Central is a really interesting division. And if they have what they had a year ago and maybe some surprises on the roster, I think winning the NL Central is very much at play this year for the Cubs.
The highest paid manager in the history of baseball is Craig Counsell, $40 million over 5 years. They stunned the baseball world with this announcement when it came down. There had been no expectation David Ross was going to lose his job. What have you seen in Counsell in his first year?
I think Craig, what stands out to me is the way he talks like somebody in the front office, just in his everyday press conferences with the media and the things that he'll bring up as far as roster construction, even just the verbiage he uses. You know, I love how he's asked a lot about some of these young pitching prospects, and he'll just say, we like guys who get outs. And, you know, at the end of the day, this team essentially has to cover, you know, I think it's 1,440 innings roughly, right? They say, and he'll kind of work backwards. And the way he describes things, it's very much a front office approach, which is a little bit different. He's cerebral. He's fun. And I'm excited to see the way that him and the front office can partner together, manipulate a roster, and hopefully add some wins to this ball club.
Somebody made a point to me about the way that he talks, which I thought was really smart. And that as he gives, as you know, there are a lot of people in baseball who will have some outward bravado where they'll speak very definitively. And this is the way that it is. And it's a self-assuredness where he talked about, this person told me, when you talk to Craig, you can hear him sort of mulling both sides of the equation. Well, you know, we're looking at this. It's possible this, this person said to me, it's a great humility for someone in decision making to have. Yeah. Tell me your sense of his personality at the beginning as he in that way.
Yeah, I think one of the most impressive things that any human being can say is, I don't know. Because especially with somebody who has to address the media every day, and I think there's a lot of sense from different people that they feel like they have to know, and sometimes maybe it's just a canned answer. And I've heard so many times during spring of somebody will ask a question and he will not be afraid to say, I don't know. And I think that's really impressive, and it's honest, right? And you don't know how the season's going to play out. And he might, like somebody asked him about Cody Bellinger last year in some specific situations, and he very much said, I don't know the answer to that. And that's really impressed me. And I think another thing that he says is he has the right to change his mind. Just because something happens right now and he might believe something right now, things happen and the season progresses and players have good years or bad years, and that changes the lineup and the construction and the things that this team needs. So he's great. I've really enjoyed my time around Craig. I'm excited for a full season of picking his brain every single day. And there's a reason that he's held in such high regard.
What's your assessment of the defense this year, which to me has got to be the backbone of whatever they accomplish, with maybe the question mark at third base?
Yeah, question mark at third base. I think the defense is going to be one of the strong suits of this team yet again. We saw the double play partners up the middle, one of, if not the best in the game, in Dansby Swanson and Nico Horner. I expect Cody Bellinger to be strong out in center field. And then if PCA, Pete Crow Armstrong, comes up, plays, he's an 80 defender. Bellinger can move to first base, an elite defender over there. Ian Happ in left field coming off a Gold Glove caliber season. I think Seiya Suzuki will continue to progress in the outfield. We heard a lot about his glove when he came over from Japan. I think it's been a little hit and miss at times, but he's still growing into himself as a major league player, and I only expect his defense to grow. So that'll be one of the strong suits of this Chicago Cubs team yet again.
Tell me how you see the divisional context. How would you describe that for what the Cubs are facing?
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation. Milwaukee is obviously not going to be what they were the last couple of years, losing their two horses in Woodruff and Burns. So they'll take a step back. A lot of people want to say the Cardinals are the most talented team in the division. It's hard for me to claim that they're going to come out and all of a sudden be an 86, 87 win team after the season they had a year ago. Sure, they added depth to their starting rotation, and that matters because that was a huge downfall for them a year ago. But you also are coming off a bad year, so I'm not ready to say they're the best team in the division yet. I think the Pirates are going to be a lot better. I think they're going to surprise people. We can't forget that this was a first place team in June last year, and you know, they have a lot of exciting young players who could take steps forward and be really good. The Reds are going to be another really good team, although, you know, tough news about Marte, so that changes up the infield a little bit for them, but I still think they're going to be solid. I think as far as the Cubs are concerned, they won 83 games a year ago. I think if they could play at a 85 win pace all season, I think you could probably say they're going to be in this for a majority of the year. I think that's very likely for them. And I do think they have a very, very strong chance of winning the division. But I could see a situation really, I could see any team winning in the division. So it's going to be fun, as it always is in the NL Central.
Last one, fill in the blank here. If X player has a strong season, that will greatly augment the Cubs' chances.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Michael Busch here. I think if Michael Busch can be a legit major league player, be a true left-handed bat for the Cubs, they need those left-handed bats. I mean, they have Ian Happ, a switch hitter, Cody Bellinger, Mike Tauchman, who will come off the bench. But if Michael Busch can have a solid season, grow into a real major league player, I think that could be a huge difference maker for the Cubs this year.
Taylor, thanks for doing this. It's always great to talk with you.
Great to talk with you, too. I look forward to seeing you soon this season.
Rick Mace is the director of programming and acquisitions around Major League Baseball and Little League Baseball. And Rick, I wanted to have you on because spring breakout games are something that you are really excited about. Tell me when the conversation started with Major League Baseball about those.
Thanks, Buster. Happy to be on. Thanks for having me. The conversation about that probably started, I'd say, about a month and a half ago. MLB, just after they announced that they were doing these, so actually let us know they were doing them, gave us a follow-up call. Obviously, it's a new initiative for Major League Baseball. They're excited about it. They're trying to draw attention to it and asked if we'd partner with them and carry some of the games on ESPN Plus if they could make them available to us. We were on board from moment one, and Major League Baseball just had to let it play out, see which games were being produced, and once they had that, came back and offered us a series of games. We jumped on it, and they actually came and offered us a little bit more recently too. And we're fully on board to help these guys out and partner with them. I think it's a great initiative for the spring.
Tell me about the way that the format was developed and the concept was developed.
Yeah. Well, for anyone that doesn't know, what Major League Baseball is doing this year is they're taking the top prospects from every team, forming essentially all-star teams. So it's, you know, if you think the futures game, it's the futures game lineup from the Red Sox, the futures game lineup from the Yankees, essentially the all-star teams of everyone's top prospects, and playing a 16 game series with them. I think that this is great. Major League Baseball has been looking for a while to draw more attention to the prospects, to those guys transitioning from college through the minor leagues before they get to the pros. And this is just one more way to shine a spotlight on them. You know, I think they're going to want to try it out and see how it does this spring. I think it's a fantastic idea. I'm excited about it.
And you love baseball. I mean, you and I have had a lot of conversations through the years. You love baseball. Tell me about some young players you're excited to see in this competition.
I do love baseball. It is the greatest game that's ever been invented, Buster, and I don't think you disagree with me on that. I can't believe I get paid to think about it all day long. All seriousness, I'm excited. I think we kick off with the first game on ESPN Plus of Pittsburgh versus Baltimore, and that's Paul Skenes and Jackson Holliday against each other. I mean, what more could you ask for? The number one prospect in baseball versus, I think Paul is number three right now, but the number one draft pick. I mean, the most exciting position player and the most exciting pitcher in minor league baseball going head to head in the first game of this. Where else are you going to see that? I think it's fantastic. You know, more so, I was talking to my son literally like 3 days ago and looking, we're here in West Hartford, Connecticut. And it takes us about 15 minutes to get down to the Dunkin' Donuts Park to go see the Yard Goats, the AA team for the Colorado Rockies. And I was looking to see when the Portland Sea Dogs are going to be there because I'm a biased Red Sox fan, thrilled about the wave of prospects that's in AA right now. And I'm going, hey, I can't wait to see these guys. And you know, Red Sox unveiled their lineup for the spring breakout game. Kyle Teal, Marcelo Mayer, Roman Anthony, Rafael Cedeña, and my son is obsessed with a player named Blaze Jordan that's in AA right now for the Sox. He thinks it's one of the coolest names ever since they drafted him. He's been all in on Blaze Jordan. So he's in the spring breakout game. We're going to go see him over at Dunkin' Donuts Park in a month and a half. But it's a great showcase for these guys.
Yeah, it's interesting. Jackson Holliday, you know, I've told the story in the podcast before. He's someone who I laid eyes on when he was 3 years old, when I was watching Matt Holliday in a cage someplace. And there's Jackson as a little kid. And I relayed the story to him today. And I met him. I said, look, I'm like the 500th person coming up to you and saying to you, I saw you on a field when you were 3 or 4 years old. He seemed like that he was absolutely destined for stardom from, you know, the time he was a little kid. It's interesting. I'm in the process right now of doing a poll of executives around baseball and asking, one of the questions I have for them is, who's the best 23 and under player? And that group includes Julio Rodriguez, includes Corbin Carroll, and the guy getting half the votes is Jackson Holliday, which tells you he's not played a game in the big leagues. Okay. So pretty exciting. Have you seen him play?
I have not seen him play in person yet. I saw the highlight like everyone else did of the grand slam that he hit like 2 hours ago. His swing looks amazing. He also looks like an absolute baby. I was watching him do an interview on the MLB Network earlier this week, and I'm going, my son's 15 years old. I'm going, you look like you could be in high school right now. And he's about to take Major League Baseball by storm. I don't know how you can't be excited for a player like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Think about this. He's 4 years older than your son, right? I mean, he's just, it's like they're the same age. The other thing too, and you've seen this with Eduardo Perez, who you got to know, you've seen it with Aaron Boone, who you got to know. When you come from a baseball family, there is an ease, a comfort level. And I saw it this morning. I was in the Orioles clubhouse and I went up and as I mentioned, I talked to him and you could feel it. And all the Baltimore writers were telling me that, you know, they've seen writers come in, national writers walk in and basically apologize because they know he's getting besieged with everyone coming through camp wanting to talk with him. And he's apologizing, you know, they're apologizing to him. And he's like, no problem. I got no problem talking. Like there's a total, like he's been in the clubhouse his whole life.
You know, Eduardo told me a story probably about a month ago. We were talking just about him growing up, you know, with his dad around the ballparks. And he told us a story about when he was a kid tagging around the ballpark with, and Sparky Anderson was the manager of the team back then.
Right.
And he said, you know, He said every spring, Sparky would let the players hang around and, you know, be on the field, play ball. He said every year they would gather the players around or the kids around and Sparky would give them his rules. You know, he rattled off the different rules that, you know, they were allowed to play this time. If the team lost, they weren't allowed in the clubhouse afterwards. But after all these things that he was giving them the ability to be around the players and be on the field, the final rule was when the game started, all the kids had to go move to the stands and yell at the umpire as loud as they could for the rest of the day. I thought it was fantastic. But what Eduardo said, the point of his story was he was talking about himself and all the other kids there. And I don't have the number in front of me. I think he said 14 of those kids ended up signing professionally. And aside from being amazing ball players and talented players, like, and again, those names were Pete Rose Jr., Eduardo Perez, Ken Griffey Jr. was one of them.
Yeah, oh, I've heard of him. You know, I've heard of Ken Griffey Jr.
Eduardo was name dropping a little bit there. But what he said made the difference is those kids were growing up and trying out, even as talented as they were, is that they grew up understanding what it meant to be a part of the team and play the game the right way. And you just have to think that Jackson did it the exact same thing and has that inside of him.
Where can people, if you can tell them sort of, where do they see this? How do they see it?
The games are going to be on. So some of the games will be on MLBN. Some of the games will be on your local RSNs. You'll be able to get through MLB TV. But we are going to have 12 games on ESPN Plus. They start on the 14th. We've got games spread on the 14th, the 15th, and the 16th. And the day that I'm really excited about for E-Plus is the game is the 15th. We've got 5 games going on that day. And in addition to the games, we're going to light up, it's actually going to be announced today, that we're going to light up a special window to go along with it called Squeeze Play, where we're going to have Danny Wexelman and Kylie McDaniel just sitting there jumping in and out, kind of red zone type coverage of all the games as they overlap.
The man and like the Manning cast version of that a little
That's
bit.
That's it, exactly. But looking at each of the prospects in each game, it's all going to be on ESPN Plus. It's going to be fantastic. Couldn't be more excited about it.
Well, that absolutely. I can't wait to see. And man, what a great way. I've always thought that the most excited that fans get actually is when prospects come up, right? It's almost like, you know, for the players, like a version of spring training because their batting averages are perfect. The expectations are high. Their earned run averages are perfect. And everyone is fired up when they arrive. All right, sir. I'm going to have you on again to talk about the early season schedule. We'll do that sometime in early April, I think.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, Buster. Enjoy the games next week.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 team preview, Oakland Athletics.
I could say that the A's big change of the winter is cementing their move to Las Vegas, but nothing is cemented. At the moment, we don't know for sure if the Athletics' future is in Vegas or Oakland or San Jose or John Fisher's backyard. Well, sorry, that last one isn't going to happen because Fisher would have to pay for the landscaping.
A guy to watch.
Zach Geloff had a nice showing in his rookie season last year, mashing 14 homers and 270 plate appearances with an adjusted OPS plus of 134. Metrics also suggest he more than held his own defensively, generating three outs above average in less than half a season. He was a second-round pick of the A's in 2021, 60th overall, out of the University of Virginia.
The weakest link.
The A's had a 5.48 ERA last season, the second worst in the majors behind the Colorado Rockies. It's impossible to sugarcoat this reality. If Oakland is going to improve over its 112-loss season in 2023, these numbers have to improve dramatically. The A's averaged 4.4 walks per nine innings last season, easily the worst in the majors, and struck out just 20.4% of hitters, which ranked 27th.
Win projection.
Sarah Langs has the A's at 58 wins. Before you assume this is just a matter of Sarah being the nicest person ever, you should know Pakoda has them pegged for 64 wins. I think that's crazy. Hembo says 58. I see improvement to 56 wins.
Jenny Kavnar does play-by-play for Athletics. The Athletics, we had her on a few weeks ago. And Jenny, I'm curious, we talked about the reaction within the industry, within, I guess, the world to the news that you were getting this job. Tell me about, you know, some of the other voices that you've heard. What's it been like to hear from folks?
Yeah, it's been, overwhelming, so humbling. Like, I'm just so excited and thrilled from all the people I've heard from. And it's given me an opportunity to reflect on some of those relationships as well. And a lot of the people that put some time and energy into you and even some confidence into you at times to move my career into a totally different direction. So I'm really grateful for everyone that reached out. And, you know, it's really, you know, this time of year, everyone's ready to play ball. And I'm like, let's slow down a little bit. I still have a lot to catch up on. The season's coming. It's coming in hot. But I could not be more excited to get started. And we'll have our first game on the air on NBC Sports California on the 15th against the Giants, A's versus Giants. So looking forward to that.
You're going to have some butterflies? Be going into that
yeah.
game?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just for a whole host of reasons, right, Buster? It's a new team. It's a new job. It's I have known Dallas for a very long time. Dallas Braden, my analyst on the shows, but it's the first time we're going to be on air together. We've never been on air together. So it's a lot of firsts that we're all checking off. And at the same time, it's spring training. So it's a lot different than a regular season game. So I have a feeling there'll be some butterflies, but it'll be fun. And then we'll have an exhibition game. And then it's like opening day. I think there'll be butterflies for a little while, for sure.
Yeah. And there's also all the things that happen that you don't have, you can't plan for. We had an exhibition game last week and I felt, cause it was just their second broadcast. I felt my heart rate going a little bit before the game and I was preparing for my hit and I was focused on that. And then the Red Sox players come out about 3 minutes earlier than I thought they were going to. And then I realize we are in a really potentially horrible situation because the Red Sox and or the umpires have not been informed about what our start time is on air.
Uh-huh.
It was at 1:08 and the players look like they're going to be ready at 1:06. And so I knew right away, I'm like, my hit what I was going to say in air, that goes away. Like, they're not going to care about a sideline report just before first pitch. But my thing was, I had to stop them from starting the game. And Brian Onora was the home plate umpire. And I like, yeah, Brian, hold up, yelling at him. That was not, it was like,
that was not in the job description as the sideline reporter that day, to also basically be like the TOC, or like the red hat would be in football or in basketball. You're like, whoa, no, we're not ready.
Right. Exactly. And that, those always come in. All right. You've been around the team this spring. Give me a couple of young players who've caught your attention.
Well, I think first and foremost, the position battle that drew everyone's attention going into the year for the Oakland Athletics was the third base position. Who was going to play there? There's a whole host of names. Abraham Toro, maybe more veteran presence in that. Aledmys Diaz, who's, you know, ended up injured here in camp. Jordan Diaz, and then you have Daryl Hernandez, who I am so excited about, Buster. This is a kid that really proved himself with his bat at the minor league level. And the biggest challenge for him was, can he play defense somewhere? This is a shortstop by trade. And he came into camp and they were looking at some film and they're like, you're not major league ready to play defensively in this game, no matter how, you know, your offense has been coming along. And he took that challenge and he ran with it. And within the last month, and just talking to some coaches and reading about him, he has absolutely rose to the challenge, taking the big step that he needed to on the defensive front, working in terms of his footwork, his arm strength, all those things. And they feel very confident, I believe, in his abilities to go out there and perhaps even be the starting third baseman for the Oakland Athletics in his rookie campaign. I don't think that would be a surprise to anyone. We're going to see a lot of young players, obviously, for the A's, but I think he stood out to me. I would say Esty Ruiz. I mean, this is a guy that stole so many bases last year, setting the American League rookie record with 67 stolen bases. But you got to get on base to steal bases. And so I think for him, it's a matter of working on his power and trying to find a way to get a little bit more contact, in addition to being patient and maybe working a walk here and there. And he's shown not only power, but opposite field power. The very first at bat I watched of him at spring was against the Colorado Rockies, and he had opposite field home runs. So that was good to see out of the gate. And then really just like when you look up and down, their batting averages look phenomenal. It's spring training, who cares? But I think for a young team like the A's, you want to see that. You want to see the potential for these guys to get on base and try and get some hits, because we all know that the last couple of years, it's been pretty dismal.
So one of my favorite conversations I had at the All-Star game last year was with Brent Rooker, who really jumped out at me, his personality. Tell me what you've learned about him since being around the A's.
Yeah, he's smart, right? He's a really smart guy, and he's quick-witted. We saw that after the Oakland A's released their, I should say the Athletics released their renderings for Las Vegas and the stadium coming up, and he was getting a lot of flack for his .303 batting average that he's going to be hitting in 2028 in Las Vegas that was up on the scoreboard there. And so he had a fun tweet about that and just like trying to have an off day, catching some strays over here. So I appreciate his engagement with fans, and I appreciate just his personality. I think too, Buster, you've been around this game forever. I've been around this game long enough. Like when you walk into a clubhouse, you can sense the personality of it. Sometimes it jumps out at you. Sometimes it's a little bit more like you need to spend a couple days there, a couple weeks there, a couple months there to figure it out. And I think every team in spring is optimistic. There's no doubt about that. But there's a different aura about this group of A's players. I think from a national perspective, and even me as an outsider now coming in, having not covered this team the last couple of years and been in the National League side of things the last 12 years with the Rockies and five before that with the Padres, everything you always read about Oakland, especially in the last several years, has been surrounded about the business of baseball and the stadium and then moving and the fans and all of these things that just you kind of write off the team automatically. And then obviously the record did not follow suit. They've lost 100 games or more than 100 games the last 2 years in a row and 112 last year. But inside the clubhouse, like the first day I walked in, something that was very palpable to me was the fact that these guys don't give an S you know what about the rest of what everyone is saying. They're having fun. They're enjoying the group. They're enjoying the opportunity and the process. And so I think that's kind of a cool way to look at like how this team got a little bit of experience last year for some super young guys. For Brent Rooker, he was the one that, you know, Kotze pointed to at the very start of the season, said, look at this guy and took his opportunity last year and he hit 30 home runs. it could happen for anyone else in this clubhouse. And so I think there's an optimism, but for them, it's a reality. It's not just like, oh, we're going to say it and we're going to go out and give it our best. Like, they're sick of losing. And I think for the young players, they've watched from afar that you can get called up to the major leagues really quick. And you, if you make an impact, you can stay. And so I think because of the opportunity, the optimism remains there. But it's a fun loving group of guys. And I think Brent Rooker's right in the center of that.
It's interesting you say that. You know, I covered the Padres in 1994 when the team was sold. And fans, of course, in that situation, fan of that particular team or any team that's being sold, that's a lot of what their focus is on. But what I learned in covering that team was the players really don't have any awareness. I'm curious to see if you agree with me on this. They have no awareness and they really don't care. And you know what? That's probably appropriate. Right. In the moment, it really doesn't matter to these guys where this team is going to be in 4 years.
Well, that's it. I think for these players, it's the old like shock the world kind of let's band together around that saying and make it the center of like, everyone's already written you off. Everyone doesn't believe in you. Where else do you have to go but up? And so I think for them, it really is that like, they're not paying attention. I'm sure I didn't get the chance to talk to those that traveled to Las Vegas this last weekend for the exhibition games with the minor league ballpark there. But I'm sure they got asked a ton of questions by all the local media in Las Vegas. And I'm sure it was in their face in those moments. But I think when they're just getting ready in the clubhouse, when they're going about their day-to-day work, when they're getting ready to play a Major League Baseball season, that's going to be 162 games. And all you can focus on now is your home games are going to be in Oakland this year. Like, that's what they have. And so you're right. I think as baseball players, like, all of these things don't really matter to them. Are they going to be Major League players on a Major League field? That's what matters to a lot of them. And there's a lot of young guys competing for spots to do that.
The other day I was in Red Sox camp, as you know, some low expectations for the Red Sox this year. They haven't done a lot. And Alex Cora was asked the question, what have you done in the face of that negativity? And it turned out, you know, he'd had a number of Zoom calls directly with him, with the players during the course of the winter. Mark Kotze managing this team now. What's your sense of sort of how he's handling that?
You know, again, not having been around this team last year or the year before, since he's entering his third year as the manager, I'm not quite sure if he's acting the same as he did at camp the last couple of years, but I almost sense this like, okay, we're not messing around anymore. I've laid out the challenges. We established ourselves as a coaching staff. We established expectations. We fell well below them the last two seasons by record. And now this offseason, I think he did that. I think he had face-to-face conversations, as all managers do with their players in exit interviews, but gave them very specific things to work on, to grow as a player, to grow as a person, and to grow in that clubhouse. And I'm sensing here at spring training, there's really not that room or that margin for error anymore. He's saying, we have our expectations. You know what they are. Let's meet them. And we're all going to do that together. At the same time, we all know Kotze is such a great person. He's a great person with the media. Yeah. He was always that way as a player, and he's that way as a manager. But I sense we're going to see a little bit more. Stern's not the right word. Hard ass isn't the right word. But we're just going to see a guy that's like, level has been risen, and you come with us or get left behind.
Jenny, thanks for doing this.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Bleacher Tweets.
Hey, everyone. We got another round of Bleacher Tweets. We appreciate all the messages we've got so far. Here's our first one for you, Buster.
Hey, Buster. Les Williams from Killeen, Texas. Astros fan. I'm curious if we could start a segment, if you could start a segment on Bob Kendrick. When you had him on the other day, that was fantastic. You know, you've done like the Forgotten Franchise, and I believe there's one about ballparks. If you could come on weekly and provide some stories of the Negro League players. Really enjoyed that. Thanks for all your hard work.
That's a cool story. Maybe he's right. Maybe we could have Bob come on when we ask him, hey, start off with a forgotten player. What do you think about that, Sean?
I think that'd be pretty cool. I thought that was a pretty good suggestion there. So maybe we might.
Yeah, I like that one. You know what? Let's put that one in the bank, because, you know, we'll have Bob on two or three more times at least as we go through before that game on June 20th.
Here's the next one.
Hi, Buster. Hi, everybody. This is James calling in from Taunton in Somerset in England. Thanks for all the great work that you guys do. You've been a long-time listener. I'm a Pirates fan, and I just want to ask you to appeal to the optimist in me that the Pirates can be this season's Orioles. We've got a good bunch of veteran guys that have been there a while and a lot of exciting young talent, hopefully on the cusp of coming through. And please don't tell me that it's going to be another bad season of very average play, hoping that we get another draft pick and blah, blah, blah. Thanks, mate. All the good work. Appreciate you all. Cheers.
James, thank you so much. I see your notes on social media, I really appreciate that. Look, you heard Taylor McGregor talk about the Pirates. Like, her feeling is they could win the division. You know, you asked me if they could be last year's Orioles team. I don't think they could win 100 games, but I do think they're going to be greatly improved. And I think that slowly but surely, Ben Cherington is putting them in a better position. And you like the fact that they're starting to invest in their young players. You saw the deal last year, of course, with Brian Reynolds, which might be looked at as a turning point for this organization.
Here's the next one.
Hey, Buster. It's Greg from Buffalo. I just have a quick question. Do you think there's enough of a financial incentive for MLB owner to have a 4-week spring training? Or do you think it'd be better for both the players' health and the longevity of the season for it to be a 2-week spring training, exhibition games, and then getting right into the regular season? Thank you.
So I just had this conversation with a player today in the Orioles camp when we were talking around, you know, well, we've now have officially reached the dog days of August when the position players are ready to go. You know, they're like, let's go. But essentially, spring training from this point goes on for the teams for two reasons. One, to build up the pitch counts of the pitchers. You know, at this point, a lot of guys are still going 45 to 60 pitches, and they're still trying to build up strength to get to 80 to 100. And the second thing is making money for the affiliate, right? To have spring training games and to pay that off on their end of things. And it's spring training is big money for a lot of these clubs that in sites that host the teams.
We appreciate everyone for leaving Buster a message. If you want to leave a message, feel free to call us at 406-404-8460 or tweet us.
All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Rob Friedman, to Sarah Langs, to Rick Mace, Taylor McGregor, Jenny Kavnar, and of course to you, Sean. Thanks for doing this.
It's all love, Buster. It's all love. I'm enjoying it, man.
All right. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.